Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey. It is good to hear from you today. Good to be back in the traces. I'm back in the correct state, correct time zone, although I kind of woke up last night and said, where am I? Whose bed am I sleeping in? But I've been on the road, enjoyed a beautiful part of the northwestern United States, out in Montana, Idaho, a little dab of Washington. It's been a great time. But I am glad to be back, ready to get ready for preaching, which is the general object of this show. And I'm anxious to hear what you got on your mind today as we review text for the 17th Sunday after Pentecost. These are the texts for October the 6th, 2019. Talk at me about some themes and some ideas and what we might do getting ready to preach this week.
Well, the number one theme and number two and number three, I mean, it just permeates these texts, is the issue of faith and faithfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so go to Habakkuk 2:4, the righteous live by faith. You've got Psalm 37 in verse 3, trust, and verse 5, trust, which is another way of talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Second Timothy verse 5, sincere faith, 12, trust, verse 13, hold on to the faith. And then you get into Luke and increase our faith in verse 5 and in 6, if you had the faith. And so we're going to talk about faith.
Yeah.
And all it runs through here. So the theme for the day, the lectionary theme, is the issue of faith and faithfulness. So we'll go to
I'd say that's a right important theme. It's good that we have these before us today. Yep.
And I started to say my number two theme, but I've already said number one, two, and three is faith. So number four, the secondary thing, faith leads to action. I don't know that you can separate these out, but this goes through there in Habakkuk. Live by faith, an active thing. Living is active, and you live by faith. You just don't sit with your faith.
Right.
And wait, those are actions. Verse 3, I love this in the Psalm, trust God and do good. That might be the core text in some ways for today in terms of what does it mean to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
Trust God and do good.
Yeah.
That's verse 3. And then in Timothy, you know, in verse 7, power, love, suffer for the gospel, the results of faith. What do you do because you have faith? And in Luke, we've got this parable that of serving, and so we'll talk about that. So I think I should start with Luke, and we'll start working
well,
through
we will. And just a quick comment. We often say, well, you know, I can't judge another person's faith. I can't look down inside their mind or their heart or wherever that may reside. And, you know, you say faith is not something you can see. Okay, granted, however, the results of your faith. It's kind of like, you know me, I'll get to a quantum thought every time I can, but in trying to understand what things like gravity are, okay, you know, Newtonian physics, oh, gravity's this force and it draws, and et cetera. Well, you start thinking about it in quantum, it's more like this field that exists. There's gravity. And you can't see the gravity, but what you can see are the results, okay? And so the planets and the stars and pretty much everything we can tell is affected by this force, this field that is there. You can't see it, but boy, you sure can see the results.
Right.
In that way, faith is kind of a quantum reality. No, you can't see it, and you can't tell what my faith is exactly. But dadgummit, you get a pretty good idea if I've got any. by the way I live, the way it affects my life. And I think your point is well taken here. This is faith that is revealed in action. And good. Well, let's see.
A couple of quick things as we move into this. Then, you know, there's one wonderful line, and I can't remember where Lewis said this. It was in one of his essays. Somebody asked him about the old lady that goes to, you know, he said, if faith changes your life, there's this old lady that lives down the street, and she's always yapping at people, and she's kind of mean, but she goes to mass every morning. And Lewis said, well, just think how bad she'd be without faith. He said, you can't judge another person because we all come out differently as a result of the faith. And so our actions come out differently. You can't prescribe this exact thing that will change in people and where they'll be with it, but everybody's in a different place.
Are you saying faith is not a cookie cutter?
It's not a cookie cutter.
Yeah.
And you know, as you say, I take my Luther, took my Luther pill this morning. So quick Luther quote. Hadn't known this since I was a little Baptist boy. I don't know where I ran across it. It was inside the cover of my Bible, typed out and taped there. And it says, we are not saved by works, but by faith. But if we have no works, there is something wrong with our faith. Faith is a restless living thing.
That's good stuff.
And so that's what we, that's kind of the preface, the preamble, the quote to begin our chapter this day on faith. So you got Luke 17, 5 through 10. One thing to note is this text, this first 10 verses of chapter 17 in Luke contain what most New Testament scholars would call kind of four semi-independent sayings. You know, Luke has taken things so and put them together, so they didn't necessarily follow. You don't necessarily have to make connection, but they're all about things that have to do in some ways with faith. You know, the first one there is don't cause others to sin, you know, the whole millstone. And then it shifts into 7 times 7 forgiveness. You know, forgive someone 7 times. And then you have the increase our faith and the mustard seed, the mulberry tree. And then it shifts to this story of the parable of the servant who comes in and don't expect to be praised. I think that story was about, and my daddy, not expect be praised. You're just doing your duty.
You just did your job. Yeah.
We'll come back to that. Man, our text follows the last two. So here's an important first thing I want to say is that first line, increase our faith, follows directly on Jesus having said, forgive 7 times. If somebody sins 7 times in a day, forgive them all 7 times. Of course they said, increase our faith. How can anybody do this? I think those two are really connected at that juncture. And he says, how can anybody do this? So then you have the line about if you had the faith of a mustard seed. Let's unpack that just a little bit. One thing is that there are two ways in the Greek to understand the phrase if you had. One is a statement contrary to fact. If you don't have any, and if you had any, that's a statement contrary to fact. But Jesus, in this case, is using it a statement according to fact. It's contrary to fact and according to fact. If you had faith, and I know you do, in parentheses, of the size of a mustard seed. And the point there, you can talk about mustard seeds and the size and all of this, but the real point, and then he exaggerates with the mulberry tree, which makes it even more logical, or more extreme, or more pointed, is he said, all you got to do is have a little bit of faith because it ain't about you. It's about God, the one in whom you have the faith.
Right.
You don't have to have a whole lot of faith. You just have to have faith that God can.
Yeah.
And things, you can trust in God his ability to fulfill that. That's the point in that part.
Yeah. You don't need but a little bit of God's action here, and you don't need but a little bit of faith. And I think that's it. The disciples' response is natural. Increase our faith. We're not up to this. We're not up to this task. You know, increase our faith. And I think the real point of Jesus is trying to say here is, hold on, folks. This is not about you. You don't have to have much faith. But if faith, God does tremendous things. And you're right. Yeah. There's some real contrast here. Between the mustard seed and the mulberry tree and, you know, thousands of times difference in the size and so on. But, yeah, we don't need to try to take that and go, okay, well, let's quantize it. Let's say, how much faith do we need? Well,
all you have to do is jump over to Matthew and Mark and see where it was the mountain into the sea. He's exaggeration for the sake of emphasis is saying,
right.
You know, it's not about what you can do. It's about what God can do. And that's where the issue of forgiving, we do not have it humanly possible for us, an individual, to forgive somebody mm-hmm. who's seven times in a row done the same thing to us. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, that's how we look at it. And what Jesus is saying to us is, it's not about what you can do. It's what God can do through you.
There you go. That's the right perspective, I think.
Which adds then into this parable, which is, you know, don't get too deep into it. It's just basically, and we don't need to get into the economic systems of the first century Palestine and all of that. It doesn't work out. But his real, so you got this guy and he comes in, he's been working in the field all day. And he says, so if you had a servant and he'd been working and he came in, would you have him sit at the table and do all of this and all, or would you expect him to continue to do his duty? Well, at a certain level, we get kind of, we're more egalitarian.
He's been working all day. I should help him out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's not Jesus' point. Jesus often says about fairness and justice, but that's not the point of this particular parable. What he's saying with this parable is focus on the servant. And the question is, should you be praised for doing what should be natural to you? A Christian be praised for being faithful to the faith? No, mm-hmm. not really. Mm-hmm. Albert Pete Perot taught at the Lutheran Seminary in Chicago, and I heard him say one time, that's like going out and saying to the apple tree, oh my goodness, you have apples. That's incredible. An apple tree has apples.
What a surprise.
What do apple trees do? They have apples. What do Christians do? They have good works. What mm-hmm. do servants do? They serve. It's the that's the Jesus point here is, don't get excited about whether you have a lot of faith or a little bit of faith. Just have faith and let God work through you. This text in Luke has to do with the faith and faithfulness. Mm-hmm. Have your faith. Even if you don't feel like you have the strength to do what God calls you to do, just do it, and God will work through it. Do what you're called to do. It is the nature of a Christian to do good, things.
There's a word for us in this gospel, although it may not be, you alluded to, we think our culture, our mindset, we think, oh, well, we're more egalitarian. I wouldn't want to make another human being serve me. That is not the point here. But this is not necessarily one of those messages that you kind of get to the end and it just gives you an uplift and it all fits nice and neat. And I used to call it, you know, you can wrap it up and put a bow on it, and you know, you give the sermon and everybody goes, oh, that was nice, thank you, Pastor. And it's going to stir a little something up in us, which is, in my opinion, what the gospel does.
None of us in middle class mainline Protestantism, which is the vast majority of our audience, wants to be told, you are a worthless slave. Let's do what I told you to do. That's not how we operate with ourselves. And so we're challenged by the gospel to think through that and say, wait a minute, why am I wanting the show up trophy, the participation trophy, you know? And Jesus is saying, you know, it ain't about that. It's about, you're supposed, you just do what you do and don't worry about reward or punishment. Have faith in God and let God work. Mm-hmm. That's his point. Moving from that to Habakkuk, just a couple of quick words setting it, and then I want to talk about the text itself. We're not certain of the historic setting of Habakkuk. It's hard to find out, but probably around the time of the rise of Assyria, 625, 612 in there. And the prophet is the wicked people are the Chaldeans, the Assyrians that are rising up, and it's kind of a national thing. So it's not, why does my neighbor, that kind of level. It's more of a national kind of thing he's talking about, but it applies. And so the form here is, you know, verse 1:1 is the title. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And then it moves, but instead of the oracle, the first thing you hear is Habakkuk making the complaint to God, the theodicy problem. We cry for help and you don't listen. You're not saving us. Why do you make me? And he does it me. Why do you make me see all this stuff? And why do I have to talk about it? Destruction and violence. I see all this stuff, and nobody likes hearing about it. He said, and I look around, and the law is slack, and justice, and the wicked surround the righteous. And he's just complaining that I can see all this, and why do you make? It's interesting. Why do you make me see it? I'd rather not see it. That way everything is smooth. Yeah. I'd rather not doing bad stuff. I'd rather not know than to know and nobody else paying attention. So
what kind of job have you given me, God? And you've left me all, this is another form, you've left me out here all on my own, and now I'm having to deal with all this crap, and it's like you're not going to show up. And not only am I uncomfortable, all these folks I'm supposed to be delivering this message to, they ain't liking it much either, and they don't like me much. So, yeah, I get his complaint.
The rest of chapter one, you know, is kind of repetitive along these lines. And then you get to chapter two, which is kind of the end of his diatribe. And he says, but I will stand at my watch post, and I'll station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see what he. So he's not even talking to Yahweh anymore. He's talking to people. I'm going to wait and I'm going to see what he'll say, what he will answer. Then 2-4, you have the answer to the prophet. He says, make it plain. This is something all of us preachers ought to hear is this verse.
Write division, make it plain.
Write division, make it plain on tablet so that a runner may read it. I've always liked that image because it's the image of news going out. But if you ever just run up to somebody and try to tell them something.
Again today, I need to let you know. Depends on who the runner is. And, you know, you and me wouldn't take, what, about 4 steps?
Oh, I don't run. I haven't run in 15 years. This summer, we at the family reunion, we have this traditional softball game. And they wanted me to play. I said, I'll play, but I won't run.
I need a designated
I can still hit. Oh, they made me run. Well, they wouldn't give me a designated runner, so I'd hit the dang thing, and then they'd throw me out at first base on a line drive to deep center because I just walked to first base. I wasn't running anywhere. Anyway, but running, you know, you take somebody who can run, and they're running between cities or towns, and they show up, and people want the news, so it has to be simple so that they can state it. That's the impact. A runner may read it so that someone can simply make it plain. And that's our call as a prophet is to make it plain. And then the second thing about it is the message is be patient. There is still a vision to come for the appointed time. It speaks of the end, does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. This is the image of holding on. I'm not done yet, God says. Mm-hmm. Be patient. And then the end in verse 4 is, look at the proud. Their spirit's not right in them. They really think everything's good, but the righteous live by their faith. And here, the word emana, faith in Hebrew, is two things. One is trust, and the other is faithfulness, steadfastness, fidelity. So when it says live by their faith, we sometimes get the image, the righteous shall live by faith, as we get quoted many times. This is another, the righteous live by their faith. And sometimes that gets interpreted, well, we just go about our life, and faith in God, it'll all work out. Hmm. Or do live by their faith means live faithfully, live out their faith no matter whether their actions are what everybody else thinks makes sense. Looking at Habakkuk, it's don't stop telling the truth. Don't stop living the truthful vision no matter if nobody else sees it. Continue to tell God's truth or live God's truth in your life. Live by your faith is not just, well, I'm just going to trust and hold on till God comes again. Mm-hmm. It is actively living faithfully each day by the faith that you have.
That's a great example of how in English, the English language, which most of us communicate in primarily, faith is generally considered to be a noun. It's something you have. Yeah. It's something you possess. It's a thing, even if you can't see it. It's still a noun. But you're exactly right. In its original usage, faith can also be a verb. Yep. You've got to faith it. You faith your way through life, and it becomes activated. It is a way of living connected, as we said earlier, to what's visible are the results of this faith, but you could say the results of faithing. You're faithing this. So noun and verb, and we have to kind of do a little readjustment when we're speaking English and we only think of it in that one way.
Semper Fi. The Marines don't just sit around.
Nope. That's it. Forever faithful.
However faithful that's doing is something. Doings. Yep. So you move down to the Psalm, and I'm 4 points here, and it's all about faithfulness. It starts off with what not to do. Do not fret with the wicked. And it says basically in verse 2, they'll fail. I love fade like the grass, wither like the green herb, and I'm looking out my window at trees that are dying and grass that's beginning to wither and fade, and it's that time. It doesn't matter how much it prospers. It will. That's a great image. Then to verse 3, trust in the Lord and do good. My favorite line. This sort of centers what these lessons are about today. Trust is having faith, and as a result of which, you do good. Trust and do good. Delight. So verse 3, and it says, wait, you know, you wait, you do good. Those who wait will survive. Take delight, commit. All of these are faithfulness things. And then you move down toward the end. Be still and wait in verse 7. And again, at the end, those who wait. So this text is leading us through this issue of here's the bad stuff. Don't fret. Don't let's say a word. Be trusting and do good. Live out your faith. Yeah. Be faithful once again.
What a great opportunity, particularly if you were to work with this text. Again, it supports the theme for the day, and we don't generally feature the psalm, but that word fret that just keeps coming up. Don't fret, don't fret, do not fret. What a great opportunity to dig around that word a little bit and say, okay, well, what does that mean? What's intended by this word fret? How do people hear it, you know, when they fret? And, I had another one of those kind old Sunday school teachers when I was growing up, and I can still see her white hair and I can still see everything. And she used that word all the time. Now, don't fret, children. Don't fret. And I thought it was the weirdest word. Of course, when you're a kid, what do you have to fret about? But don't fret. Don't get yourself all worked up. Don't,
I'm struggling to remember this singer. It was an a cappella song, and it'll come to me. Bill something. Don't worry, be happy.
Oh, you're talking about Bobby Brown, right?
Bobby Brown. Don't worry, be happy. Mm-hmm. This ain't Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Yeah, right.
This is not Don't Worry, Be Happy. This is Don't Worry, Be Faithful.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Be faithful. So moving into Second Timothy, and this is, you know, the beginning of the second letter of Paul to Timothy. And one of the things to point out here, and I've been thinking about this. I happened upon it and been thinking about it, did some research. We always just talk about Timothy as a young man. We think he's 18 or 19 in Bible college or whatever it is. And actually, the language here, he's not necessarily that young.
Right.
He is younger than Paul, and he's a child in the faith, but he's a pastoral leader, and he's writing to him. So just don't think of this too much as a teenager. Think of it a little bit differently.
Timothy is not completely inexperienced here.
Exactly.
He's not brand new.
Right.
But Paul, the older, the mentor, the father figure, etc., continuing to help Timothy learn, which from our lofty position, Baba, of many years of service, I'm still learning, man. I think back to being, you know, 25, 30, 40 years old, even if I thought I knew everything I needed to know about ministry, I had a lot to learn, and I'm grateful for those who appropriately left me some crumbs of advice.
When one of my sons was in college, and he had called me up about I think it had to do with dating, and of course I was not at all helpful. But I did what I could to listen. And then I had my phone call with my mama, who was in her about 80 by that time. And she said, "How you doing?" I said, "Oh, I've just been talking to one of the boy. And, you know, he's asked me, last time I asked anybody out for a date, I was in high school. I married the first one that would go out with me. I was whining." I said, "Don't they ever grow up?" There was a long pause, and mama said, You're calling me, aren't you?"
Zingo.
Bingo. We always need somebody.
There was your Lois and your Nicey moment right there.
That's right. You know? That was it. That was it. Yes, ma'am. That's what I usually said at that point. She let me do it. No. So this letter starts off. This is the beginning of the letter. So it starts with 1 and 2 kind of the greeting, you know, from Paul to Timothy. There's that "my beloved child" that gets a little mistaken. What he's saying there is the one who converted under my ministry. Mm-hmm. You came into the church under my ministry. And he's grateful, you know, talking about gratefulness, all this good stuff. And then 3 through 5 is kind of the obligatory Thanksgiving. Doesn't mean he's not serious, but that's what you do. You sort of start with a Thanksgiving. I remember going to a lot of churches I went to, when somebody started the testimony, they started saying, "I just want to thank so-and-so and so-and-so, and I want to thank God for this and thank my Lord." And then they'd move into their testimony, and it's on this model, you know, that always the thankfulness is in the midst of, you know, verse 1 through 5, "I'm thankful for this. I'm reminded of that." And then he moves into the heart of the matter, which is an appeal to Timothy, to hold on, be faithful.
Right.
Trust and faith. Talks about rekindled spirit. This is probably, when it talks about the laying on hands, it's probably a reference to his ordination, although it's unclear. We didn't really have ordination. But it could also, you know, I think we should all hear it as our baptisms, that this, there was, you know, either as for my tradition, as child, although I was 21 when I was baptized. I
got this
mixed history. But, you know, this instant, the laying out of hands and God's spirit coming upon you, don't ever forget that. This is what he said. Don't forget that this was, and then the gift of God that is within you through the laying on, that God has gifted you, again, back to the faith. Increase our faith. You don't need any increase. You got everything you need. God is the one who does the faith. And it comes. And then one It comes through the community, your family, the apostle, the church, but it's God working in you. That's the first one. He encourages them to hold bold witness. I love 1:10. It's kind of a short version of the kerygma. Not according to our works, but according to our purpose and grace, this grace was given to Christ, in Christ Jesus before the ages began, a beginning of that whole sense of who Jesus is and God's in it. And then see, at another point is hold on to the faith. And in the midst of all of that, there is that activity. And what is his activity? Well, he gives you power, love is active, and suffer. Suffer is encouragement to get out and do things, even though they might, you may have to suffer on behalf of them. This is one of the, and I'm going to end here. Faithfulness, as some people define it, and I call it low grade prosperity gospel. Now, high grade prosperity gospel, most of us don't get into. You know, we just think it's tacky to say, if you give the send in this money to this prosperity preacher, God will bless you and, you know, all that. But we have a low grade version of it that's more clean, which is, if I'm faithful and good, God will bless me. And when bad things happen, you know, we say, what did I ever do to deserve this? I've been good. I've done this. And what is this? Careful reading of the New Testament reveals following Christ does not necessarily lead to blessing. It can often lead to suffering, which we do in the imitation of Christ. If we are the body of Christ in the world, then we expect to wear the wounds of Christ for the world in our life here. And that's part of what it means to hold on faithful to the faith we have been given. Increase our faith indeed.
As North American Christians, the suffering we are more likely to endure than others is perhaps the suffering of a failure or lack of success, or, you know, maybe a little ridicule. Maybe we become the butt of somebody's jokes, things like that. And I don't diminish that. But I think I really like what you said. This is a faith that calls us to get out there and try stuff, get out there and do stuff. And it's not about a measure of success that God will give. As pastors, sometimes we go, why doesn't my church grow? Why do I continue to serve small churches and so on and so forth? Well, God is simply asking you and I to be faithful and do the work. Do like Habakkuk, you know, make the message plain. And it's God who, through the mustard seed of just a little shred of faith, will provide whatever increase God decides to provide. I love that closing verse in Timothy. Guard the good treasure entrusted to you. And that whole word right there is a treasure vault, the place where you put that which is most precious. You put it in there, you lock it up, you seal it, you're holding on to it. That's going to be what is going to sustain you. And besides, we get the help of the Holy Spirit living in us. That's a pretty good deal. All right, Bubba, we've talked our way out in just a little over time today. Thanks, everybody, for staying with us and for tuning in. We'll be back next week, have a little more stuff to say. But I reckon for today, Bubba, there's not much left for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Sally Gooden, performed by Nat Keefe and the Bowties. We go out today with Mr. Bob Dylan, All Along the Watchtower. This version is with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
We've grown all alone. somebody to lead.